Hidden Growth Champions, the podcast. Business news, views, and insights from across the globe.
Hi guys, welcome back to Hidden Growth Champions. This podcast is a little different to previous podcasts as we have Sol in the hot seat. And we're going to discuss the journey of Ascent Growth. If you don't already know, Ascent is celebrating its 5th year anniversary this month. We're going to dive into the journey and how Sol has built Ascent into the organisation that it is today. So Sol, for those listeners that are new to Hidden Growth Champions, can you set the scene and tell them a little bit about yourself and a little bit about Ascent Growth?
Sure. Thanks very much for the opportunity. I mean, when I heard for the first time the team has chosen me to sit in the hot seat and to not host the podcast, but to look at it from the other perspective, it was a little bit daunting, but I kind of felt, well, I think there's a great story to tell here. And it's great now in our 5th anniversary, we can actually share more of that story. So a bit of a personal background onto myself. I've actually started off my career in corporate. I ran a manufacturing company. And we had the crazy idea that we could export our products across the pond to the US. And then later on, started doing something similar in the UK and in Germany. And coming from an emerging market, there were a lot of assumptions. There were a lot of ideas as to why this couldn't be done. We couldn't compete with China and many other assumptions. And perhaps we were just too young to know otherwise, but it worked. And it was a fun journey. I've done it for about 7 years, and the team was absolutely amazing. And when I kind of look back at that period, I took a lot of lessons into my professional consulting career, which I've been in for close to 20 years now. It's been a wonderful journey. I've worked with some of the strategy houses. I've worked with some of the big four, worked for one in particular, worked alongside in partnership with, in opposition to, but mostly I enjoyed working for the niche consultancies. And when the opportunity came up to start Ascent Growth in 2016, initially in South Africa and then later on in Asia, I couldn't say no. It was just this wonderful opportunity to start something new, to listen to the call that was kind of brewing in me for quite a while beforehand, and to do something different with clients. So I said yes, and the journey of Ascent really started from there.
So you're right, Ascent is a great story to tell. So Ascent was born, which is great. You noticed an opportunity to help businesses to improve how they deliver on their strategies and to help them grow. How do you continue to grow and develop Ascent?
Well, I guess there's two parts to it. I just want to go back for a moment. You said Ascent was born, but In fact, it was born as an idea before it became a company. It was born out of essentially realizing through conversations with others, some very close to me, some clients, partners, in people who thought similarly, that something could be done differently within the consulting industry. It was really an idea, and we were testing it with ourselves first and then with others. And the more we tested, the more we grew in confidence that we could do something different here, that the way that the consulting industry has grown and became, in a way, obsessed with growth, became about the army of people that would be unleashed on the client organization, very often with not too much organization, lots of politics, and very often under-delivering on what was promised, was something we can do differently. So it was an idea first, and only then, through a client opportunity, it became real. And very quickly, the team got together and we got going. So I just wanted to kind of, I guess, put that in perspective. I guess when it comes to the kind of work we do, I guess at the center of all of this, and I'll talk a bit more about strategy and innovation a bit later in the conversation, but for me, it really boils down to listening deeply, listening to clients, what they're really saying, what they're truly saying underneath the kind of veneer of targets and things to do, things to achieve. And similarly, listen to ourselves. I often marvel at the kind of insights, the kind of clarity that comes from our team conversations, where something has to be said and it kind of percolates to the surface and someone just says it. You know, we talk about being brutally honest with ourselves and with people that we work with, and similarly with partners. And for me, I see that as the essence of the organization. That's been very special to me and I think to many people on our team. The ability to do that, the ability to listen with great intent to listen deeply, and the courage to say what needs to be said for a real transformation to take place.
So you've mentioned obviously how important it is listening to clients and what it is that they're really, really thinking. What kind of clients do you work with at Ascend?
Yeah, great question. We ask ourselves that question often, because we have kind of the formal answer for it, which I'll share with you. And then there is kind of the deeper answer to it. Formally, if you look at the numbers, we work with, I guess, two sets of clients is organizations. We work with mid-cap organizations, organizations that are challengers in the industry. They're hungry for growth. They want to challenge the paradigms in the industry. They make decisions quickly. And very often, certainly when it comes to innovation work, we work with them. The second set of clients we often work with are large corporates, often listed companies and entities that have kind of a unique set of complexity in their business, where one size solution doesn't fit. We've got to really dig deep to appreciate the uniqueness of the organization. And all client organizations are unique, but when you add that layer of complexity to it, you really have to spend more time to kind of get to the core of what needs to change in the organization. What's common to both these types of organizations is the individual. In every organization we worked with, it always starts and is always centered around an individual which starts a movement, or who starts a movement. An individual who wants to change the paradigm, who wants to change the status quo, who sees things clearly or feels the need to have that clarity generated. And very often, certainly in the earlier years, our first port of call, our first piece of work was very often a coaching conversation with clients, very often the CEO of the business, and in some cases, even board members. And the kind of clarity that was generated out of those conversations was truly inspiring. You often find that the individual has a personal vision, a direction in which they would like to steer the organization, and very often create a movement around, enlist others in it. And that for us is inspiring. It's motivating. It helps our team to think differently and to recognize that ultimately you're working with human beings, and human beings that want to bring to life something that's very special, that's often very well thought through, that people have spent much time, energy, and effort into realizing that it needs to come to the surface, that it needs to come to life in the organization or through the organization. And when you keep that in mind, the work becomes very meaningful. And that's, I think, something that's very special that we've come to realize in our tribe.
You've spoke about, obviously, the different kinds of clients, and in particular, those that are challenges in their industry. So in your work with clients, what would you say, or it's quite a broad question, but are the main challenges that you've found that the client has faced in wanting to grow in a rapidly changing business environment?
So it's a really interesting one. I mean, I guess what we see is across industries, whether we work with financial institutions, whether we work with technology, media, telecommunications companies, or whether we work in the energy or natural resources space, even in education, what I often find is that the recognition that what seems on the surface to be a challenging environment, difficult conditions, increased competition, the need to work with social partners and others in new ways, ultimately comes down to the realization that in fact, what is happening in this post-COVID environment is disruption en masse. It's disruption at a scale and at a depth that we have not seen before. You know, we have the privilege of working with a number of futurists, and in many of those conversations, and as they work with us, the kind of scale of disruption that we are seeing, that we are unearthing, is tremendous. We don't know of a period in history where we've had something similar to this. And when we misdiagnose, when we see it simply as being challenging, as being difficult, and therefore we, as individuals, it's very natural to say, well, let's try harder. Let's throw more resources at it. Very often we find organizations getting into more trouble and not achieving their objectives. When we look at it more from a disruption perspective, new things become possible. But when I look at it again from an individual perspective, there's kind of three challenges to that. Once you realize that it is a disrupted environment, and it's an environment which can be anticipated, but very difficult to virtually impossible to predict. Here's the three challenges. At a personal level first, there's a challenge here. And I found, certainly with the leadership teams that I work with, the personal challenge very often is about finding our voice. We know inside that something needs to fundamentally change. We know inside that the kind of organization we envisage is going to be different to how currently the organization operates. And our clients will share with us very personal stories of how they've come to that realization. But finding that leadership voice where that could become an open conversation, where the executive board conversation fundamentally changes, where new individuals come into the environment and can participate in a richer and more diverse conversation, is that first challenge. It's overcoming that personal challenge and recognizing the importance of having that unique voice and or giving voice to the kind of ideas and realities that you are seeing unfolding in front of us. The second challenge we often find is, and that goes, I guess, more to the team, is very often overcoming the loneliness, overcoming the isolation that we feel when we try to steer the ship in a different direction, when we try to bring people together to do something that's different, that hasn't been done before, or that has been done perhaps not, it's been done in a different way. So the how could be different, sometimes the what is different. And when we see that, very often we find leadership teams, both individually as well as a team, that actually feel pretty lonely, that feel sometimes unheard, sometimes unsupported, sometimes in conflict with, and sometimes perhaps not knowing how best to accelerate this process. That brings about the feeling of loneliness. And sometimes people will start doubting themselves. Did I see the disruption for what it is? And, you know, have we got the direction right? And that is often the challenge, both for the team and for the individuals concerned. And the third challenge we often find, and sometimes clients would refer to it as a challenge to scale or to accelerate, and that's a challenge of really creating a movement and sustaining that movement within the organization and very often with partners. I find the current environment very noisy. There is so much noise out there, and it's becoming increasingly difficult to distinguish between or discern what is truly, truly important, what are the real signals which we need to take into account to help us navigate better, to find the right strategy, to implement faster, to generate new value, to innovate, versus a lot of noise that's in the environment that's actually counterproductive, that we shouldn't listen to, that we shouldn't factor into our knowledge base. And that's a real challenge. And in creating that movement, I often find that we have to bring together and recognize that it's not there about the data and the masses of data that are now available to us in this post-COVID environment, but it's bringing the human beings together. It's about activating and triggering that wanting to change en masse and at speed within organization. So those are really the three challenges that we see. The personal challenge of finding our voice, the challenge of overcoming that insulation, that loneliness that we find when we try to change, steer the boat, transform an organization, and then ultimately the creating that movement that goes very often well beyond our initial vision or initial plan for what it could do.
You mentioned leadership teams and that leadership voice. What qualities would you say are lacking from today's leaders?
It's a really good question. I guess there will be a few candidates for it. And here I want to distinguish between what's on the surface, or often what we'll call above the line, skills. There are certain skills that I think we've learned at speed in this period of time. We've learned how to collaborate better. We've learned how to interpret data better, how to visualize better. We've learned how to negotiate better. We've learned how to communicate in remote and virtual environments better, et cetera, et cetera. Those are all necessary skills in our leadership work. But for me, the one that really stands out, it's below the line. And that's developing a sense of empathy. Because developing a sense of empathy is, as much as there's a skill associated with it, I find, and certainly in our work, it's not so much the skill, it's a mindset that needs to change. And once that mindset changes, becoming kinder to people around us, becoming more open to others, giving willingly of our time, are all elements of empathy. Not just as something that we mechanically practice, but something that we truly believe in and we see the value of. Empathy towards ourselves, empathy towards fellow workers, empathy towards people who are different to us, different gender, different racial groups, different cultures and geographies. I think if there's one thing this pandemic has helped us do is develop that sense of empathy. Sometimes more challenging, in more challenging way than others. Sometimes, it, you know, in ways that came out of conflict, out of lack. But that sense of empathy for me is essential to the kind of leadership we need to practice. We need to step up and show in order to overcome these kinds of business challenges and capitalize on the kinds of opportunities that we certainly see leadership teams tackle in this kind of environment. So yeah, I would say probably number one on the list.
Yeah, well, that's really interesting. And one thing that I wanted to talk about was now is the Ascent team, who are a team of like-minded individuals, all passionate about growth and making an impact. And I'm sure they give their time and they are empathetic towards the different cultures and different geographies. I know the tribe at Ascent are in different locations as well. And I just wanted to talk about what are the most important traits that you look for in people to add to the Ascent tribe?
So I'll try to answer it kind of in two steps. Firstly, maybe just to clarify, we see ourselves as a very diverse tribe. I mean, you've got individuals in the tribe that come all the way from the West Coast of the United States and Canada and all the way to the Philippines and anything in between. So from that perspective, it's a very diverse tribe. And I remember in one of our conversations, one of our team members actually clarified it so nicely. You know, she said, it's not that we're like-minded, but we believe in similar values. We have a sameness in the kind of things that we value rather than what we practice or what our position is or what our perspective is. The perspectives are diverse. The underlying mindset and values is what binds us together. And when I saw that very vividly is about 2 years back when we wrote our manifesto. And it was a very interesting exercise. We were asked to essentially become the as part of a simulation exercise to become the crew of the Titanic. And we were there to answer different questions and to make decisions that will impact people's lives. I mean, there were thousands of lives here at stake, and we all know how, you know, what the end of the story was like, or at least parts of it. There are some surprising elements to the Titanic story. But what was really interesting for me, as we were sitting there for the entire day, trying to manage an evolving crisis and a very human story, what we found was that we discovered what our values really were. And we wrote them down in a document called the Manifesto. And in fact, if you listen to any of our podcasts or follow any of our weekly inspirations, you'll find a link to our manifesto. We now have it in our second version, Manifesto 2.0, which is a 2021 version. 2 years down the road, we decided to add to our manifesto and add one more value, which is around anticipation. And it's a document I'm incredibly proud of. I'm astounded by what our tribe put together in kind of celebrating and acknowledging our values and what we are similar in. But the diversity of it is a strength. And we try to cultivate it. We try to celebrate it. And we seek that out in all of our client engagements and the way we structure the teams, and the way we work with clients and the diversity they bring into the work, and in many, many other ways. So that for me is just in terms of, I guess, what we're like-minded about. In terms of question you've asked, in terms of what we look out for, we actually did a very interesting exercise some time back because we got really curious as to what that would be. And what we found is we really seek out people who have that sense of curiosity. they could have very different educational backgrounds, very different work experiences, certainly from what I've mentioned earlier, that they would come from different parts of the world. But what they have in common is that sense of curiosity. They would ask us very interesting questions. And with that, they have the willingness to learn. They reciprocate by their ability and their willingness to learn. And therefore, when I bring those two together, they're able to solve very interesting challenges, very interesting questions. And then finally, what comes with that is a sense of community. They're part of the tribe because they choose to. They're part of the tribe and choose how closely they work with us and how much they participate because of that affinity to the community we've created. And I think that's something very special. And it's very different to the kind of environments that I was used to in my consulting career earlier, where you're either a number and your association is through timesheets and letters, or you know, you are a project resource. I hate that word. I don't think any of us are resources. I think we're people first. And when we get appreciated for being that unique individual rather than being a resource on a project or there just for a period of time, but what brings us together is that affinity for the tribe, that willingness to learn and wanting to practice the kind of values and principles that you ascribe to, that's when magic happens. And that's what I feel, that's what we're like-minded in, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, and I definitely agree. I think that sense of community is really important. And like you said, not being just a resource or a name on a timesheet, for example. One thing that I wanted to ask was, do you see Ascent as a challenger in your industry? And another question just on the back of that is, what are the biggest challenges of being a challenger in your industry?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I do see us as a challenger, and our manifesto, you know, speaks to that in a number of ways. But I must say, I have seen right from the beginning, right from when we started, there are companies that we admire, that we see as challengers, that we've learned from, that we appreciate how much they've kind of carved out a new way of working with clients, challenging the kind of the commercial models that consultants and clients work in. And so, you know, we're certainly not the first. We have our own wall of admired organization. It sits on a mural board. Everyone in our tribe have access to it. And we often go back and from time to time add another company to that list. They're all incredible organizations. We feel humbled to be added to that list and to recognize ourselves as being challengers. One more thing, maybe to add to it is, you know, being a challenger, and I guess where we see ourselves as being a challenger, and one of the biggest challenges about being a challenger is to continue being a challenger, where that becomes part of the culture rather than something we decide to do. I remember some time back, we asked ourselves the question, seeing that we work in the innovation space, and seeing that often our clients ask us to help them develop innovative solutions, we posed the question to ourselves and we asked ourselves in a fairly brutal fashion, as we used to, are we innovative? What makes us innovative? And that led to a fascinating conversation and a very necessary conversation. And I think what makes us a challenger is that at every opportunity, certainly that I can remember, we step in to be the challenger. We step in to do the work differently, better. We step in and choose to push the envelope. It doesn't always work. There are times where we've got to reel back and say, okay, maybe we pushed a bit too far. Maybe we've now learned that we need to push a bit more to the left rather than to the right. And that's something we often do together with our team, with partners. But just a deliberate act of continually reminding ourselves that we want to be the challenger, that in every opportunity we will step up and do it, because that's what's required. You know, as part of our vision, we speak, there's four parts to our vision. The one that speaks very much to our work with clients speaks about, you know, our partnering with clients to build forward. If we are to build forward, we have to challenge. We have to be that challenger. There is no rule book anymore. And when that became part of the culture, when almost every person in the tribe reminds us of that next opportunity to do that, that's when I kind of stood back and said, I think we've done right. So that for me is something that really stands out in being a challenger.
Yeah. Joyce. You mentioned about working in the innovation space. Is that something that was a decision from day one to focus on innovation and strategy? Or if not, how did that come about? How did that evolution come about?
Yes. So it wasn't a choice from day one, I must be honest. When we started, the word growth was very much central in our mind. We were working with organizations that were striving for top-line growth, that were trying to create revenue-producing new products, new services, new value propositions. And that's really where we started. What we found over time, and I must give credit to, you know, innovation experts like Chris Beswick and others who really challenged us to recognize the innovation growth ceiling, that invisible layer that is present in almost every organization, almost without fail, where suddenly people realize that to reach the kind of aspirations they set out for themselves, however way they define their vision, their set of objectives, their key results, their metrics, however way they set it, there's that invisible glass ceiling that separates the kind of aspiration and the ways they go about trying to transform themselves and achieve those objectives. And we found it almost without fail in organizations. And in order to overcome that ceiling, one needs to innovate. Now, here's the interesting thing. When we talk about innovation, people often think about technology or technology first. We actually found, both in our research work, both in our practical work with clients, and certainly when we speak to innovation experts, that in fact, the technology innovation space has become far more crowded. And therefore, the returns on technology innovation, apart from the very few that are truly innovating in terms of technology, lies more in the management innovation space, lie more in the partnering and collaboration and in the regulatory space. That's where we see the potential for greater innovation. And that's where we've stepped in. So do we work with organizations that innovate technologically or rather leverage technology to innovate? Absolutely, you bet. But equally or even more so, we've been able to help organizations innovate in the way they lead, in the way they manage, and in the way they work, particularly with others, with partners, with joint ventures, and with organizations sometimes that they acquire. And that's often where the biggest failures to innovate happen. So that's been a real learning. But did it start at the beginning? No, it hasn't. I wish I could say that, you know, that was kind of the first thing on our mind. We've discovered it and we've adjusted. And if there's one thing I must say in credit to the team is that ability to stay true to our course while at the same time being very nimble, changing our minds in terms of how we get there. Sometimes it happens in the course of the same day. It's really, you know, has been very valuable for us. So yeah, it's something that I have to give real credence to the team. We've been practicing it day in and day out.
Mm-hmm. So following on from the previous 5 years and the interesting challenges that you've solved and the tribe that you've now built into a community. What's next for Ascent? Where do you see Ascent in 5 years' time?
I guess a couple of things. I guess, you know, firstly, there's a lot of things that are going to be the same. The vision we have for ourselves for the next 5 years, and we've spent a considerable amount of time over the last few months sharpening and ultimately putting it into our manifesto, there's a number of elements to it which really amplify a lot of the good work we've done and certainly the values and principles that we hold dear for the last 5 years. So we don't see ourselves in a completely different space. We still see ourselves still working with clients, building forward. We just use that term more deliberately now. It has a somewhat different meaning that we can now ascribe to it. We still see this as a very rich, a very diverse, and a very empowering tribe. We see it as a place in which both our equity partners and other contributors are rewarded, are celebrated. And ultimately, we see it as a space, and we in our tribe have over 90 individuals. We see ourselves is this tribe with such diversity, such breadth of skills, and such industry experience, we see ourselves more and more solving challenges which we've come to term pioneering work. And I'll give you an example. And I think this kind of spans geographies and client organizations. We were approached some time back by a startup, certainly not an organization we would consider a standard client within the kind of remit that we would normally look for clients. And their work is truly inspiring. Their mission is to help both organizations and individually women to achieve gender equality in our lifetime. Now, gender equality, according to the latest studies, is going to take more than 2 centuries to achieve. To achieve it in our lifetime is truly inspiring and daunting at the same time. Now, we've worked together as a client to help shape strategy, to help understand the challenge and find very interesting options that they could exercise to accelerate that process. But that gave rise to even more pioneering work. And we're now working with them to help organizations to find, discover, and develop the business case, the business opportunity around gender equality. We often think of gender equality as a business responsibility, as the right thing to do. Well, we found that over and above that, beyond that, there is this very significant business opportunity. When you bring gender equality into the core of how you create value in the organization, you can achieve incredible things. And we're now working with them in developing the business case and working with corporates to instill that in their own organizations. Now that's truly, certainly for us, that's solving a societal problem that should not take 2 centuries to solve. That should be solved well within our lifetimes, well within our generation. And for me, that's the kind of challenges that certainly our clients are getting closer to, are getting involved in, and more we have the privilege of participating in. So the pioneering work is certainly one aspect of it. The second aspect of it is the geography. One of the, I don't want to say the best things, but certainly one of the surprising things that this pandemic has helped to create for us was the ability to work not just remotely, but in a very engaging fashion digitally. And that's an interesting challenge. It goes well beyond just participating in Zoom calls or using digital canvases. It goes to the heart of how you engage with clients, with teams who are remote, who are distributed, to solve really meaningful challenges, to redesign the core of their business sometimes, to find new ways of generating value. And once we figured out how that could be done, and we've had some wonderful, I would call them co-conspirators, clients who gave us the opportunity to do that right as the first lockdown hit. We found that makes it easier for us to work across geographies. So while initially we were very much based in South Africa and looking at markets across the African continent and in the Middle East, we've opened up our Asian office in Singapore in 2019, and we're now starting to look for opportunities in Latin America. I think the emerging world has some very interesting challenges about how we build forward. And we would love to participate in some of those. And that really inspires us. So when we talk about our vision of innovating beyond borders, that became a very real and tangible kind of set of objectives. And that's what we see ourselves growing beyond, both in terms of the nature of the work, more pioneering work, and through innovation, to be able to bring that work into new geographies.
It's really nice to hear the example about the pioneering work that your team are helping the client with on the gender equality front. It's really good to end on an example. I know, Sarah, that there's so much more you can talk about when it comes to growth, transformation, and innovation. But as a final insight for our listeners, can you give a top tip or top bit of advice to help organisations out there that are looking to scale their business?
It's not an easy one because organizations are unique, but there is something that is in common, certainly with the individuals we've worked with that I've learned from and that our team have found co-conspirators or co-collaborators in developing something new. And I will put it down to three things. Look out for what needs to be built forward. In many instances, we're not building back, or we're not even building better. We're building forward, we're building different. Whether we look at healthcare, whether we look at the future of education, whether we look at gender equality, almost any challenge that organizations are tackling, whether we look at clean energy, we have to build forward. So look out for the problems that we need to build forward in. Not back, not better, not more of, not just solve, but build forward. When you actively seek out those challenges, when you can name them, when you can point to them and say, that's what we need to build differently. That's what we need to build forward. I often find that kind of it releases the energy. It brings forward collaborators that could work with you to have that done. And again, if I could just go back and use the gender equality example, I was amazed at the kind of collaborators that started working with us on building the business case and helping organizations realize tangible business value from gender equality, from accelerating and instilling that in new ways in their organizations. Just because we could name it, just because we could say it's about the business opportunity, it is about value creation, it is about innovation, it's not just about the business responsibility. That would be the first thing. Look out for what needs to be built forward and name it, say it, involve others in the conversation. The second thing I would say is use imagination first. There is lots of data out there. The problem we often have is we start with the data and we don't often know what to do with it. There's masses of it. My base advice would be find out what you would want to innovate in, and that requires imagination. It requires of us to let go of how we worked before, what we thought was possible, what we thought our industry should be providing. You know, think of digital banking. Think of the digital energy transition. There's so many examples out there where we had to use imagination first before we go to the data. I often find if you imagine well enough, the data becomes clear. The data becomes accessible. It's easier to fetch it. It's easier to identify what's needed. So use your imagination first and then go search for the data. I think you'll find that it's easier. It's easier than you thought initially. And the last thing is for all of us, keep learning and keep developing yourself. If there's one thing I've realized about leadership, and particularly in this environment, is the return on leadership development, and particularly deep vertical leadership development, not the skills development, but the mindset work, the real underneath challenging ourselves, the return on that is, I almost want to say it's almost infinite, is unmeasurable. And we should do that first. Once that happens, a lot of the other things become possible. So invest in yourself, not just at the level of skill or knowledge, but invest yourself in your underlying leadership mindset and capacity. And that will stand you in good stead, whatever problem you're building forward towards.
Not just one tip there, but three tips. Thank you, sir. And thank you so much for being a guest on the podcast today. A little bit different to being a host. It's been really interesting to find out more about Ascent Growth, how Ascent Growth was formed and what's been happening over the past 5 years. And thank you for listening to Hidden Growth Champions today. If you'd like to learn more about Ascent Growth and for some useful resources, we've linked to the Ascent Growth website in the show notes where you can get in touch with Sar and the rest of the tribe. And also we've linked to the manifesto that we mentioned during the talk as well. We'd love to hear your feedback. You can get in touch with Ascent on LinkedIn or by emailing info@ascent-growth.com. Thanks again, Sal, for being a great guest and telling us about the fascinating journey of Ascent.
Thank you. It's been a great conversation. And thanks for the tribe and instigating, getting me into the hot seat. It was great fun. Thanks, Polly.
Hidden Growth Champions, the podcast. Join us next time for more business news, views, and insights from across the globe.